Our topic this hour, the great download debate and its impact on both the recording industry and on how we use the internet. For a number of years now, music's been available on the internet for people to download and exchange with millions of others using file sharing programs. Now, as you might imagine, the recording industry does not think that this is a swell idea. And the industry is now going after some of the bigger swappers. And two congressmen have introduced legislation that would make it easier to crack down on this activity. There is a lot at stake at all this, both for the music business and for how we've grown accustomed to using the internet. And that's what we want to talk about next with our guests. Joining us, Alec French, who is the minority counsel on the House Judiciary Committee. He works for Congressman Howard Berman of California, who's proposing the new legislation we just mentioned. Mr. French, good morning.
Glad to be with you.
And joining us as well is Jason Schultz, who is the staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a group that's been concerned about the proposed legislation. Jason Schultz, happy to have you here.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Here, too, is Joseph Menn. He's a Los Angeles Times reporter who covers the technology industry, and he's also the author of All the Rave, The Rise and Fall of Sean Fanning's Napster. Mr. Menn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Now, let me start with you, if I might, Mr. Menn, and let's just do a little quick technology 101. Because for people like me who don't really get the difference between an MP3 and a P2P, this can all seem sort of daunting, but it's really not that complicated a concept, is it? I mean, basically, this technology just allows you to get the music that you want for free and swap it with other people. Is that about right?
Well, I mean, how much people, whether it's free or not, or based on advertising or cost of initial software is a separate issue, and there are plenty of variations of that now, and I think there are going to be a lot more to come if the decision holding that some of these systems are legal is upheld. But the basic technology, you're right, is not all that fancy. It was a great insight a few years ago, and it just sort of combines the search engine with what's known in tech jargon as presence awareness, like an instant messaging system that knows who's on at any one time. And all Sean Fanning did was combine some of those elements so that if you're searching for music, only people with music who are online and that music is available will show up. So you know it's there.
And speaking of Sean Fanning and Napster, again, for people who might not have tracked this story terribly closely, it'd be possible to think that once Napster went away, was taken out of business 2.5 years ago, that this went away. But it hasn't. How come, Joseph Menn, is this still available, given that Napster was what Napster was doing was ruled illegal?
Well, there are a couple things. I mean, one is, again, because it was more of a brilliant insight than some patentable invention, other people were able to mimic it and write similar programs. And legally what happened was that they learned from Napster's mistakes. I mean, Napster was the, beheaded revolutionary, and the people who came after did a number of things different. Technically, they made it more decentralized so that one of the reasons that Napster got in big trouble was that it knew who was swapping with whom at any point in time.
And that made the copyright argument much more clear, because you could point at Napster and say, hey, you know that what people are doing is illegal.
Exactly. There was an ongoing relationship with the end user. And the Sony Betamax decision, the 5-4 ruling some years ago that said the VCR was legal, just barely, one of the main reasons is that after the VCR is sold, the company that makes the VCR has no control over what those people do. And so the subsequent peer-to-peer companies, Morpheus and Kazaa and Grokster, sort of mimic that. And they give you the software, and then they get out of the picture, and you find each other. There's no ongoing relationship, or not very much of one, not like Napster had.
All right. And Jason Schultz, let me bring you into this. The reason why this is a big deal, in fact, both for users and for the recording industry and the people who are concerned about it, is because lots of people do that. The figures I read are that something like 25 million people, or 25 million households, which is about a third of all households that have computers, are engaged in music downloading. So this is not just something that's happening here and there. It's something that a lot of people are doing, and that's why the recording industry is concerned.
Well, yeah. In fact, the numbers that we've seen are close to 60 million people are file sharing in America.
So, you know, it's close to one in five Americans, if you want to go and look at it that way. And it's become very much a part of the technology that people have come to expect to be part of the Internet. They like file sharing and they want to keep it. And I think that's posed the central question is, you know, are you going to start to sue and prosecute 60 million Americans and try and use the legal system to essentially enforce a prohibition against using technology that they've already come accustomed to using?
And Alec French, with the who is the minority counsel on the House Judiciary Committee and works for Congressman Howard Berman of California, this whole question of sort of putting 60 million Americans or whatever the million number is in jail, you know, obviously sounds like something that would be incredibly difficult to do and perhaps unwarranted because it's just people exchanging music. Make the case for us, if you would, as to why this is something that you think needs to be addressed.
Well, you know, I think the first thing you have to do is step back a little, and the way that you've posed the debate is, users versus recording industry, and the people that Mr. Berman hears from certainly hears from the recording industry, but he hears from needlepoint designers, photographers, graphic designers, songwriters who are seeing their livelihoods eviscerated by file swapping, by online piracy in general. Thousands of e-groups that are swapping and needlepoint designs, photographs being sent everywhere. Certainly, songwriters lose 8 cents for every download that someone makes through a peer-to-peer system because by statute they're limited, not even allowed to get more than 8 cents. And the songwriter, by the way, is not the recording artist or the record label. The songwriter is some guy or gal who typically makes less than $20,000 a year and from royalties, and they're seeing file swapping just eviscerate their livelihood. So it's these type of individual copyright owners who are most dramatically affected by the file swapping that's going on, and it's these kind of people that need some help from by stopping file swapping, illegal file swapping. Mr. Berman all along has been very clear that the technology is a great technology and used for legitimate purposes is a great idea, and if artists, creators of any stripe want to use it to distribute their product, more power to them. But certainly, file swappers don't have the right to make that distribution decision. It's the artist who has the right to decide whether they're going to distribute their product through this mechanism.
Jason Schultz, your response to that, because that's the clear argument, that you're basically jeopardizing people's livelihoods, whether that's recording artists or needlepoint designers or whomever. Those people are not allowed to collect payment for their product because this illegal swapping is going on.
Well, I mean, I think Alec brings up a very good point, which is the key issue here is whether the authors and artists are getting paid or not. And I think actually that's a focal point for the solution. But let me point out that, I mean, realistically, the recording industry is the one who is subpoenaing, 871 people's personal identities right now, and they're the ones who are going to be bringing the lawsuits. There are complaints from, I'm sure graphic designers and needlepoint artists, but the people who are really bringing the lawsuits and are really making the threats are the recording industry companies who, produce the CDs. The other thing is that the new law proposed by Congressman Berman, the ACOPS law, as they're calling it, to make file sharing a felony, basically, even for one song, doesn't put a single penny in the pocket of artists. And so if you're going to talk about a solution to this problem of artists not getting paid, I think that's where you've got to start. There are ways to fix this that don't involve lawsuits, don't involve criminal prosecution. The copyright law has always been malleable, and when you've had problems like this in the past, we simply changed the copyright law to make sure that artists get paid for something, and I think we could do that here, and it would keep file sharing legal, get artists paid, and solve the problem.
But I assume the way in which artists would benefit from this, if this piece of legislation goes through, Mr. French, is that it would cut down on the activity, and therefore one would presume if people are feeling threatened by this, don't want to go to jail because of this, don't want to be sued because of this, they'll stop. And if they'll stop, then CD sales or needlepoint sales or whatever it happens to be will go back up again, and artists will benefit from that process. Is that right?
Well, a couple points. One, part of this is about artists getting paid, but part of this is also, we do live in a society that respects property rights. It's not someone else's decision as to whether they'll take away an artist's property right. The artist has the right in the intellectual property, and if they choose not to let anyone have it, they have that right, and it's not a matter of government deciding whether they're going to take away artist's property rights or not. Secondly, you know, you're right, the only lawsuits you're going to see right now are the recording industry, because an individual needlepoint designer, as Lynn Skinner, a needlepoint designer, pointed out in a hearing before Congress just last week, can't afford the $20,000 buy-in to bring a civil action. She doesn't have the money to sue someone, and people know this. I mean, just read to you 2 seconds of an email that a needlepoint designer got back that was posted to an e-group, says, the trolleys, that's what they call designers who are trying to enforce their rights, have been harassing us for years. Any lawsuits? No. Anyone been arrested? No. Anyone lose internet service? No. They're full of hot air. Ignore the whiny little twits. Well, you know, this shows the attitude of the infringer, that needlepoint designers can't sue them. They don't have the resources. No one's ever been thrown in jail. It's you know, a free-for-all. Let's go for it.
This may seem simplistic, but let me just ask this question, just so that we all have a kind of bottom-line understanding about what's legal and what's not. As I understand it, using one of these file exchange programs like Morpheus and LimeWire and others, it's illegal, right? I mean, to use this to acquire music without any compensation to the artists is illegal. Is that correct, Mr. French?
The courts have stated very clearly now, whether it's Napster or the Madster Court or even the Elcom Court, that using a peer-to-peer system to upload or download a copyrighted work from another without authorization, another's copyrighted work without authorization, does not come under any definition of fair use. It is an infringement because it is a distribution to the world, to millions.
And Joseph Mann, let me bring you back in on that point. Given that understanding that there are, you know, somewhere between 25 and 60 million people doing something illegal, do people know that? I mean, you cover this culture, you cover technology for the LA Times. Is there sort of just a kind of cavalier sense that, oh well, it's not hurting anybody, what does it matter?
Well, I think one of the many pieces of evidence in the Napster case was the sort of comment that was typical on their bulletin boards. It was a user who wrote, "We all know it's illegal, we just don't think it's wrong." And I think there is a danger that we may be losing an entire generation here. I think copyrights as a whole have been devalued dramatically. And part of it, you know, we're sort of letting the record industry off the hook here. A lot of this is their fault. They didn't come up with viable alternatives. Record executives I interviewed, you know, did a mea culpa on this. The Apple Store is very good, and it's what they should have done 4 years ago for the 97% of people that don't have Apples.
Let me just interject, if I might, there, for people who are not familiar with this. There are now legal alternatives to this if you want to download music. There's the thing that Apple started called iTunes. There's actually a new version of a legal version of Napster that's coming out, and there are others which allow you basically to pay a subscription fee to get an amount of music per month, or to acquire titles one at a time for 99 cents or whatever. So there are now, and you're suggesting if that had been done some time ago, all of this other stuff wouldn't have proliferated so much?
It wouldn't have been this big. It would certainly still be around. I think the other point, though, is that you can't criminalize 60 million people. I mean, it's not going to work. And the history of the peer-to-peer movement, which is, I think, what it is, shows that draconian laws and lawsuits aren't going to work. I mean, you're just declaring war on a bunch of hackers isn't really smart. It's going to backfire. The peer-to-peer systems will start competing on who has better cloaking devices.
Mm-hmm. Let me read you a quote, if I might, and Jason Schultz, get your response to it. Alec French had a quote that he said represented a certain attitude. This is another one that I found that I suspect represents the attitude of many people who use this technology, and it's from someone who says this: "I know what I'm doing is illegal, but I feel it is no more threatening to the music industry than taping a TV show is threatening to the broadcast industry."
Yeah, I mean, I think that quote actually says a lot, because of the 60 million Americans who are file sharing, a huge percentage of that are teenagers and college students. And if we're targeting criminal laws at teenagers and college students, and I mean, do we really want to put all those people in jail? The question becomes, is there a cultural shift going on in what copyright law should be? I mean, copyright law may be right now that much of this is illegal, but just as Congress can make it a felony, Congress can also change things to make it a different copyright law where file sharing is legal. And I think that's a valid question to ask, is why are we not pursuing that avenue as vigorously as we might be pursuing others?
Alec French on that question.
I mean, I think that's an incredible attitude, that somewhat of an elitist attitude, that if you have a computer and you've got the money for a computer and a broadband connection and ISP and you happen to be in college, stealing shouldn't be criminal. But if you're a kid who doesn't have that computer, and when you want to steal music, you got to go into the neighborhood record store and pocket a CD, oh, well, that's shoplifting, and you should be penalized and prosecuted for that. I mean, just because someone has the money to be able to steal through a high-tech method, they shouldn't be found to be criminally liable. But if they have to do it because they don't have the money by pocketing a CD, it's okay. You know, and I got to say, first, you know, I've kind of allowed this characterization of Mr. Berman's bill to go on, but he's not criminalizing any activity that wasn't already criminal. I got to be clear about that. Downloading one CD, one song right now may be criminal as a misdemeanor under current law. Mr. Berman isn't changing the standards at all by which that's determined. He's simply saying in certain circumstances, uploading one copy now equals uploading 10 copies. But you still have to prove as a prosecutor it was a willful infringement with knowledge, with intent to infringe. That it was infringement has to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. So this bill doesn't criminalize any more activity than was already criminal.
Well, it does make it a felony, so uploading one file becoming a felony, you lose your right to vote, you go to jail for up to 5 years, and I mean, for teenagers and college students, that's a pretty harsh penalty. But I think it raises this question of, when you mentioned stealing and taking something from, you know, a CD store, I mean, that's a good question, because I think this is a little more of a gray area. We've had this problem before in copyright law. You know, the recording industry, when radio was started to play, you know, music on the air, accused them of stealing the music. The movie industry accused television stations of stealing movies when they play them on the air. These things get worked out in copyright law. And in fact, the notion that the copyright owner absolutely controls everything about their copyright is not true. In fact, there are a number of parts of copyright law, like fair use, that you can't protect ideas. And in fact, there are even compulsory licenses where in the music industry, for instance, if you want to make a cover of a song, the copyright owner cannot actually stop you, but you have to pay them a compulsory rate of 8 cents per song per copy.
So,
and,
Jason,
and that's exactly the compulsory license that's not being paid through P2P services right now. Every single copy that a P2P user makes, they're supposed to be paying 8 cents to the songwriter, and they're not. So, obviously, the compulsory license doesn't work in this case. But just to take that basic point, no property right is absolute. They're all limited in some way. What you're proposing is let's limit the property rights in this circumstance farther to accommodate thieves.
Alec French is one of our guests. He's the minority counsel on the House Judiciary Committee and works for Congressman Howard Berman of California, who is proposing new legislation that would clarify, rather than change, but clarify certain aspects of copyright law so that uploading, downloading music would fall under those statutes. Jason Schultz is here as well. He's from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and Joseph Mann of the LA Times. And we're now joined as well by Mitch Glazer, who is the chief lobbyist for the Recording Industry Association of America. He's their senior vice president for government relations. Mr. Glazer, happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about what's at stake here, and we've just been debating this question of what this crime of downloading music is equivalent to. And the way it's basically being put forward, as you may have heard since you joined us, is it any different to download music, to engage in so-called internet piracy, than it is to go shoplift a CD from your local records store? I assume you would say that there is no difference.
No, the means of theft is different, but the fact that it's theft is not different at all. What's at stake here is the ability for consumers in the future to have commercial investment and artist investment into new music that's delivered to them in ways that they want it to be delivered to them. And so for the past couple of years, the recording industry has spent most of its time licensing new digital services that will bring music to consumers in ways that they want. Apple's iTunes, the new buy.com service, listen.com's Rhapsody, Full Audio, the list goes on and on of different types of business models for services. But at the same time, and I think what you're talking about here, to complement those new services which can attract consumers, since they have to compete with free, there has to be an enforcement mechanism against theft so that those new services can survive and the music industry can survive.
And briefly, because we're about to take a break, the others have been, some of the others have also been raising, Alec French with the, or rather Jason Schultz with the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Joseph Mann of the LA Times. But as a pragmatic matter, you can't put 60 million people in jail.
No, you can't put 60 million people in jail, and you, can't. There's no way to assure that thousands of people in cars aren't running red lights and breaking the law either. But you can issue enough tickets to create a deterrent effect that most people obey the law, even though you can't watch everyone all the time, nor would you want to watch everyone all the time. But it's very important that people understand that the risk of getting caught is high enough that it's not worth it, especially when you can download it for 79 cents.
All right. Mitch Glazer is one of our guests. He is with the Recording Industry Association of America, along with Jason Schultz, who is the staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Alec French with the House Judiciary Committee, and Joseph Mann of the LA Times. We are debating this morning this question of whether or not file sharing on the internet and downloading music is the equivalent of shoplifting a CD, and if so, what can we do to change that so that artists get their new, but the internet culture itself does not fundamentally change? And we will return to talk about that subject in just a moment. We welcome your calls on this subject. We will take them at 866-SF-FORUM, 866-SF-FORUM, that's 866-733-6786, or you can call us locally at 415-863-2476, 415-863-2476. We'll take your calls on the subject of so-called internet piracy. What can be done about it? What should be done about it? And what will the internet be like in the days and years to come? That's coming up. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Coming up in the next hour of Forum, we're going to take a look at the state of the Bay Area housing market. Is now the right time to buy or not? We'll hear from real estate experts from around the state of California. And tomorrow on our program, the latest on the recall. Who's in, who's out, and what's going to happen next? We'll hear from people who have been following that story closely. And we're always interested in hearing from you. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Or you can give us a call at our listener response line. That number is 415-553-3300. 415-553-3300.
Local underwriting is provided by BAJobs.com, partnering with KQED to offer Bay Area residents opportunities in the biotech, government, and not-for-profit sectors. Information is online at kqed.org/jobs. And by Stacy's Bookstore, featuring James Curtis signing copies of his W.C. Fields autobiography and talking about the upcoming Fields retrospective. It's actually W.C. Fields biography, isn't it? Talking about the upcoming Fields retrospective, Friday at 12:30 p.m., 581 Market Street, San Francisco. What happens when people live on the edge then go too far? Novelist John Krakauer ends up writing their stories. Krakauer has turned his sights to the dark side of extreme religious conviction. The author of Into Thin Air has just written about two Mormon fundamentalists who murdered their younger brother's wife and child, claiming God ordered them to do it. Terry Gross talks to John Krakauer on today's edition of Fresh Air, 1 o'clock this afternoon, 7 o'clock this evening here on KQED Public Radio. 88.5 in San Francisco, 89.3 in Sacramento, 931.
And welcome back to Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson, sitting in this morning for Michael Krasny. Our topic this morning is so-called internet piracy, file swapping and sharing of music, what that means for our internet culture, and what can be done about it. Our guest, Jason Schultz, who is staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Mitch Glazier, who is the Senior Vice President for Government Relations at the Recording Industry Association of America. Alec French, House Judiciary Subcommittee Minority Counsel and works for Congressman Howard Berman of California, and Joseph Menn of the LA Times and the author of a book about the rise and fall of Napster called All the Rave. Joseph Menn, talk to us a little bit about what's at stake here. We've talked about what's at stake in terms of the artists, but what's at stake for the internet culture if all of this does get ratcheted down, as Mr. French and Mr. Glazier are arguing ought to happen? What's the consequence of that for how people view the internet?
Well, I think it's a big assumption to think that even a major penalty is going to ratchet it down dramatically. I mean, maybe, I don't know, 20%, 30%, but you know, people are going to find other ways of doing the same thing. They're already so accustomed to doing it this way. I mean, a lot of people began to use email and other functions on the internet precisely because of Napster. I mean, they started with Napster, and then they learned how to do other things. I mean, it's really, particularly for younger people, it's a core part of the culture now. It's how they discover music. They never buy CDs, many of them.
And so this technological cat is out of the bag.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any way it's going away. I mean, not if you've got companies, you know, based in Vanuatu that are owned, you know, somewhere in New Zealand. You know, it's not going to happen.
So are Mr. French and Mr. Glazier engaged in a sort of fool's errand that can't work?
Well, you know, certainly what people are doing is illegal. And, you know, I certainly think it is wrong in most cases. If stuff is out of copyright, of course, it's not wrong. But most people are looking for Britney Spears. They're not looking for, you know, obscure blues tunes from the beginning of the century. One can debate the penalties. I think a much more productive tack would be some sort of global political solution. And it's got to be where this is going eventually. It's just going to take us a couple more ugly years before we get there. Blank audio tapes have an extra fee attached to them that gets distributed to rights holders. And there has to be, I think, the only rational way to solve this is to come up with some sort of system like that where money is distributed. There are fees on internet access or on PCs or on something, and that money goes to the right people. Because you can't be a cop in everybody's living room. You just can't do it.
All right. Let's begin to take our listener calls on this question, and we do welcome them. Again, you can reach us at 866-SF-FORUM, 866-733-6786. And let's go first to Henry this morning. Go ahead, Henry. You're on the air.
I have quite a serious problem with the record industry, and simply because I feel it's a monopoly, and we as consumers are every single or every decade they bring out a new form of music. I own songs on vinyl, I own songs on CD, now I have them in MP3 format. At what point does the record industry have to turn around and say, okay, we've had this song on the market for 45 years, now we can't sell the CD anymore for $17 or $18? A drug company has a point where there's a patent on essentially copyrighted material. They're not exactly the same, but it's the same principle. Mm-hmm. What point does the record industry have to turn around and say, okay, this Beatles song has been on the market for 40 years, and we can now turn around and sell it at $1 rather than $17 or $18.
All right,
let's
get a response to that question. And I assume that the point behind it in part, Mitch Glazier, is that if prices came down after a certain period of time, just as they do with his prescription drug analogy, and if then where CDs were much more economical, then people would buy them and not turn to file sharing as a way of getting that old Beatles CD.
I think what you're seeing is evolves. And people migrate back to singles again, especially in the digital marketplace, is this incredible competition to attract consumers with very low prices for singles. 79 cents a single or 99 cents a single that are available on most digital services right now, I think no one would say is a bad deal for the consumer. And I can guarantee you that the marketplace determines pricing.
So your argument would be that these legal alternatives, like the iTunes service or the others that are being developed, where you can go get music for a reasonable fee, that that's the solution, not changing when copyright expires.
Well, right. If you know the market, the reason why American music is so successful, not only in our country and around the world, is because here the marketplace rules. Here there is no grand overlapping government structure for core distribution of product. Imagine if the government determined the price and distribution rules for CDs in a record store. That would be the equivalent of some sort of overarching licensing system that the government imposed here. And I think that you would see all of the successes of American copyright industries, movies, music, software, books, etc., that have so dominated the world market and trade completely dissipate.
Mitch Glazier is one of our guests. He's the Senior Vice President for Government Relations at the Recording Industry Association of America. And let's go next to Christine. Go ahead, please, with your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a graphic artist in the Bay Area, and so, of course, this is a very interesting topic to me. And I'm wondering, I've heard that the movie industry is starting to run ads, trying to raise awareness that, you know, the scene designers and the set designers are being hurt by file sharing and by illegal copying of DVDs, things like that. I'm wondering, instead of jumping right to raising file sharing to a felony rather than a misdemeanor, if anyone is considering any sort of education campaign or, because a lot of people, like you said about needlepoint designers, people don't realize that these are small time businesses, self-employed people who don't make a lot of money. A lot of people seem to think that this is just some big megalith corporation trying to beat down some small kid. But I think that if we could somehow get some sort of educational campaign out there and saying it's not just these huge corporations, it's not just million-dollar recording artists, but, you know, it's songwriters who get 8 cents a song, it's needlepoint designers who make $19,000 a year, what have you.
And there are people like you, right, who would be affected by this because you're connected to it. All right, let's get a response. Alec French, take this on, because Christine is actually one of the people who you would like to help. So what do you say to her who is affected by all this but thinks that you ought to educate rather than criminalize?
I think that education is a key part of it, and Mr. Berman has, you know, every time he's spoken on this issue, said there is a global solution. The global solution is one part education, one part deterrence, i.e. lawsuits, one part legitimate marketplace emerging, and one part, you know, using technology to technological self-help and other measures to try to control legal activity. Education is certainly a key part of it. You know, that's why he speaks on these issues. That's why he tells me to come on radio shows like this. That's why another bill that he put in at nearly the same time with Chairman Smith of the subcommittee actually calls on the government to engage in an educational campaign on exactly these issues.
And do you think in the end that sort of educational approach, as Christine suggests, and I think as Joseph Menn and Joseph Schultz are also suggesting, that really is part of how we'll need to approach this, that the sort of felony approach in the end is not practical?
I think the deterrence approach is still an important part of it, because people need to know there are consequences to their actions. Education's a key part of it. You know, frankly, a big problem with the educational side, and you know, no offense to your program, but it is the way you posed it, is continually the press poses this as recording industry versus freedom-loving internet users and does not focus on the individuals. That is a major part of this, and I think that as that story gets out there and people begin to realize the vast majority of copyright owners are individuals, that hopefully that has that educational component or effect that we're talking about.
All right, let's go to another individual who is listening. Aaron is next. Go ahead.
Hi there. What I'm hearing from the Recording Industry Association of America is that I'm buying a copyright when I buy the music. So I have thousands of records, and I've been downloading, you know, the electronic version of those instead of transferring to my computer, which is a laborious process. Am I, you know, legally, you know, responsible for that? Am I going to be sued for that? And then my other question is, can I sue the recording industry that these formats are, you know, my records are all scratched and yeah, I have to pay full price for getting that on CD?
All right, let's get answers as we can. Mitch Glazer.
You actually raise an excellent point that needs to be clarified. You never buy the copyright. The copyright is owned by the creator of the music and the creator of the product. What you buy when you buy a CD, for example, is a particular copy. On that particular copy, you can give away that particular copy to someone else. You can sell that particular copy to someone else in a garage sale, for example, or in a used CD store. But you don't own the copyright, and you don't have a right to make a copy of that and give that copy to somebody else. You also don't own the music in general, meaning that you don't get the benefit of that same music in a new and improved form or in lots of different formats anytime you want it because you happen to buy the original in one format. So it is important to understand that you are only the owner of that particular copy, and you get what you paid for in that consumer bargain when you purchased that particular product.
Let's take one of our emails. This comes to us from Gary in San Francisco, who writes in, I see the central issue here being the recording industry's resistance to new distribution technology. The music-consuming public no longer values the recording industry's legacy of distribution systems, truckloads of plastic discs. Instead of heeding those market forces and adapting to a new digital distribution model, the recording industry is using its political influence to force consumers to continue to buy what he calls their buggy whips. Mitch Glazer.
Unfortunately, this argument becomes an excuse, ignoring all of the new services out there, to continue to engage in theft. I think anyone who looks at the diverse array of digital services that are out there and all the different consumer models, from Apple iTunes and buy.com with the download of a particular single for a certain price without any subscriber ship necessary, versus the subscriber models where you can have all you can eat on a monthly basis for a certain fee, some with burning, some without burning, some are streams, some are downloads. There is a huge marketplace out there that's experimental, looking to see what the consumer likes best. But if consumers continue to steal instead of engaging in the legitimate marketplace so that that marketplace can emerge and migrate to a healthy, robust one that serves consumers in the way that they want, everyone's going to lose.
Jason Schultz, let's bring you back into this. You hear the argument that there are new technological legal alternatives, iTunes and others, that allow you to get music off of the internet at a relatively modest price. So this isn't about buggy whips. There are, in fact, new technologies that are legal. And so there isn't an excuse anymore to engage in illegal activity.
See, and that's the thing is, actually, I think that's not exactly true. I think these services are quite inferior. People who've used them, when you talk to them, for one, the selection is very, very small compared to what you can get today on file sharing. I mean, 300,000 songs sounds like a lot, but when you compare it to the millions of songs that have, you know, been recorded over the last 40 years, that, you know, many of which you can get on these file sharing networks, consumers are really saying, you know, here's a choice I have between a very small collection and a very large collection. The other thing is that most of these services,
go ahead.
Most of these services restrict your ability to use the songs far more than if you bought them on a CD. If you buy a CD of music, you can load those songs on your computer legally. You can load those songs onto an MP3 player legally without restrictions about when you play them, where you play them. And a number of these services actually severely restrict your ability to use the song that you paid 79 cents for, or use the song you paid 99 cents for, and consumers don't like that as well. So I think until those services start offering the flexibility consumers are used to from CDs and the availability that they can get on file sharing, you're not really going to see that much migration over there.
But it sounds to me a bit like you're making this argument. You're saying that the selection isn't as good, the services aren't as good, and so therefore consumers will continue to do something that's illegal. I mean, that's a bit like saying, you know, I don't like the cereal that's available at my grocery store, so I'm going to go steal a box somewhere else. I mean, you know what I mean? Just because the choices aren't there doesn't necessarily justify doing something that's not legal.
Oh, you're exactly right. And I'm not trying to justify it, but I am trying to point out that the services being offered are not the solution to the problem. It's not like, oh, there's no reason to go file share because you have everything here for 79 cents or 99 cents.
Yeah.
But the other, the other aspect of that is the question is, you know, if it's currently illegal, and as Mitch was saying, it's sort of like speeding. The fines and the penalties are way above what you get when you get a traffic ticket. A felony for one, but also the lawsuits brought against people here, and we've seen four examples with four college students already. You know, are the kind that can bankrupt a family. I mean, it's just the severeness of this deterrence approach, and bankrupting families who are trying to send their kids through college. I mean, it's way above the kind of fines that you would get from speeding. And so if you're going to take that kind of deterrent approach, I think you have to look at it realistically.
All right. Let's get a brief response, Alec French, on that point, that the penalty is out of line with the crime, and then we need to move on and take some more calls. So brief response,
sure.
Please.
Well, the felony penalty would apply to someone who is willfully, in other words, knowingly infringing and intending to infringe, uploads a copyrighted work with the intent to distribute that work to millions of people, to an unlimited number of people, and beyond a reasonable doubt it can be proven that they are doing that, then in that case there really is a good case for that person being subject to a felony. They are knowingly distributing to millions of people a copyrighted work with intent to infringe that copyright. That what is the difference between that and someone driving a truck out to a street and starting to distribute counterfeit CDs by the thousands? There is no functional difference between the two.
All right, let's begin to work our way through our calls. Lots of people wanting to call in on this subject. So let's go next to Michael in Palo Alto.
Hi, I just want to make one point and ask a question. It seems like people have this idea that we're somehow hurting the artists, and in some cases I'm not sure that's so true. I think just a couple of talent equals success when it comes to music, and hard work also, and I just want to point out one of the most successful bands in history is the Grateful Dead, who actually would have encouraged this type of activity, and that's because they worked hard and they were talented artists. And there are artists on the web that are offering free downloads of their music because they have the confidence that, you know, they're talented, and that once people get a hold of this, they're going to come and maybe buy direct from them or go see them in live in concert in San Francisco. So I'm not so sure that the argument that we're actually hurting the artists. I mean, I don't know. Much maybe the songwriters at one level get hurt by it, but and I just also want to
hang on if you would,
like,
please.
A lot of artists have tried to circumvent record companies ever since the '60s, and I wonder why that is.
All right, let's see if we can get an answer on the first point, Mitch Glazer, that this really isn't hurting the artists so much as it is the recording companies.
Well, the caller raises a great point about artist choice and the choice of the copyright owner. If an artist decides, and it's the artist's decision, that they would like to distribute their material for free, if they are making money from touring and promotion and they would like to allow their audience to make a copy of that particular live performance because that is included in what they want the consumer's bargain to be for that particular concert. If they want to put it out on a peer-to-peer system, those are all valid choices, but the choice belongs to the artist. The choice does not belong to someone who's making the decision for the copyright owner to say, well, because you don't know that I'm helping you, I'm going to take away your right, and you can't enforce your rights against me to take this from you. If a person who owns something decides to give it away, that's fine and valid, but a decision can't be made for them.
Is that the key point in this, Joseph Men, that the technology isn't the problem? It's not the technology that's incorrect or illegal here. It's how it's used, and that this technology could be used, as the caller and Mish Glazer suggest, in a way that's beneficial to artists.
For recent history, in the case of Napster, the first thing that brought this all up, I spoke to a lot of bands, and there was a lot of posturing on both sides. I think the most extreme example is Chuck D of Public Enemy writing a New York Times op-ed supporting Napster as a new kind of radio, and it turns out some of the internal Napster documents show he was paid $100,000 for that endorsement. But a lot of bands were initially supportive of Napster, and generally speaking, the more obscure the band is, the happier they are about exposure. They can't get on the radio, and a lot of bands were very happy and have put up their own websites, but it is their choice. And even some of the bands that were initially supportive of Napster, including the Beastie Boys and The Offspring, eventually got pretty angry because it was clear that Napster was about making money, and you know, they never even asked for permission. Offspring would have happily given permission to Napster to put their material online, and Napster never asked. So I think a lot of this has been turned around. Yes, the record industry probably gets hurt more than the individual bands, but the individual bands should have the right, and they really don't in the way it's working now.
All right, and next to Trey. Go ahead, Trey. You're on the air.
I kind of want to piggyback on that last point that I think, you know, fairly or not, it seems as if the market is sort of self-regulating, and I think a lot of consumers feel that, you know, the pricing of CDs for the last, you know, 5 or 10 or whatever years has been a little unfair, and people are trying to, you know, distribute their own costs of the CDs, you know, into other types of music. And, you know, a lot of people that I know are not buying CDs. They're still buying CDs, but are also, you know, maybe doing some file sharing and are trying to bring the price of their own CDs down on their own.
Out of line, and part of what is so attractive about this other technology is that it allows you to get music, obviously much less than what it takes to buy a CD at Tower Records.
Buying the CD at Tower Records or Barnes & Noble compared to buying it at a Best Buy or a Target, you'll find that the pricing is actually all over the map. The record company gets the same wholesale price no matter where it's sold, whether it's a loss leader at one store or it costs more because there's a coffee shop and someone who knows everything about music to help you find your selection at another. It's all about consumer choice. Consumers have the ability to buy CDs at cheaper prices depending on the environment and at more expensive prices depending on the service. And these are all good things depending on what the consumer wants. In addition, if they want it digitally, they can go to iTunes and for 99 cents buy it, and for that same price burn it onto a CD and transfer it to a portable device. It's all about providing lots of choices in different forums and formats to consumers. What's not tolerable is a culture of theft, where instead of having e-commerce, we take the commerce out of that equation and we only have e, which achieves nothing.
And next to Steve in Mountain View. Go ahead, please.
Well, I only had just three questions.
Why don't you just give us one, because we're a little short on time.
These are really short. One is it going to be illegal for libraries to loan music? And two, is it going to be illegal for me to donate music to libraries? And three, if that's not the case, then why is it illegal for me to loan music to my friends?
Okay. Thanks, Steve. At least you got your three questions in quickly. Alec French, your response?
It's, as Mitch pointed out earlier, perfectly legal for the caller to take their CD that they purchased, that copy, to loan it or give it to a library, or to loan it or give it to a friend, or for the library to then loan that particular copy out. But the key distinction is, when you buy that CD, you are not buying the right to make unlimited copies of the CD or to send through the internet copies of those to 1, 2, or 1 million of your best friends. You're buying that copy within very narrow parameters. You can make a fair use of that copy by making another copy of it, but you don't have the right to put your copy, you know, rip it, put it online, and make it available to anyone.
Let me read one last email because it brings up a clarification, and I do want to make sure our audience gets this. He says, I'd like to make sure that we correct a possible misconception. Use of any file sharing program, be it Napster or any successor program, is legal. You may share files at will. However, your actions become illegal if you share copyrighted material without authorization. So thanks to Eric to make sure that we get that correct. We're approaching the end of our hour, and I just want to return now to each of you with just some brief last thoughts on what you think is important for our listeners to go away thinking about as we continue to debate this topic. First to Joseph Mann.
Well, as I said before, I mean, I think the cat is out of the bag. I don't think peer-to-peer file swapping is going away anytime soon. In fact, seeing as a couple of flavors of the systems have been found to be legal, though the individual using them may be breaking the law, I think you're going to see a lot more evolution of different business models, different approaches. And I think politically what makes the most sense for everybody is some sort of compromise where artists get paid, but the technology is allowed to flourish.
Mitch Glaser.
Let's let the marketplace that has changed so rapidly over the past 3 years, imagine what's happened over the past 3 years and what's going to happen over the next 3 years. Let's let it get to a place without trying to draw any rules or government regulations around it, so that consumers can demand and get the choices that they want. And hopefully through programs like this, people will know that this is illegal activity and will also understand that the integrity that's available on legal services get you away from the pornography, the privacy and security breaches, and the integrity problems that also exist on these pirate services.
And Jason Schultz, as our proponent of what the internet can be about, a brief last thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think the marketplace here has spoken. I think 60 million people want to have file sharing, and I think the thing here to do is to make that legal and to get artists paid. And at EFF.org, we have a program for a campaign called Let the Music Play to try and get Congress to take a look at options for making file share legal. And I think that's an important piece of the puzzle here. I think, you know, we have to talk about a way to solve this problem without hundreds of thousands of lawsuits, bankrupting families, and making, you know, teenagers into felons.
All right. And a brief last word, if you would, please, Alec French.
Brief, sure. You know, I would like to be able to get cereal in individual handfuls for each breakfast, but I understand as a consumer that the owner of that property has made a choice to package it to me in a certain way, and it's not my right to go in the grocery store, open it up, and grab a handful and demand that either they sell it to me at a lower rate or I can walk out the store with it.
All right. Alec French, who is the Minority Counsel of the House Judiciary Committee, thanks for joining us. Thanks, too, to Joseph Mann of the L.A. Times, Mitch Glaser of the Recording Industry Association of America, and Jason Schultz of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.